come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I am your host, of course. I am Mark Suddeth. Good to have you along with me here as we continue our journey back in time. Wrapping up 2010 now, we're going to wrap it up in a nice box and put it on the shelf. We are done with 2010 and we're going to get into 2011. But before we do, just a few odds and ends here as we ended 2010. What was I talking about? What was I doing? Well, glad you asked. If we go back and look at Twitter, I was checking out the advanced search there. One of the big things was the end of 2010, right around Christmas time, there was a really big snowstorm, blizzard, coastal storm, mid-Atlantic up to the northeast. I mean, it was a whopper. They called it the Boxing Day storm, I guess from Canada. That's where that comes from, I do believe. And this was a really significant snowstorm. We even had snow down in North Carolina, and I was talking about that on Twitter. Our good friend that I talked about in the last episode, Dan, he had an apartment there in Manhattan, and he was streaming live on our Ustream feed. By the way, that was one really unique thing about Ustream, is for people that I could trust, people that I knew. I mean, you don't just give out your info to any old person that you run across on social media. But I could tell Dan, hey, log in with my credentials into my account, and you can stream from your device. And so he did that back in 2010 in that really big snowstorm, and we streamed it live on the Hurricane Track Insider site to kind of wrap up 2010. Also, as we got to New Year's Eve, I followed the tradition there, I guess, of some of the TV networks have done over the years where they do a marathon, you know, Star Trek marathon, you know, whatever, Seinfeld marathon. I think TBS shows A Christmas Story with that kid Ralphie and the significant prize or whatever it was. He won that lampshade that had a leg, and they run that near Christmas time on TBS for 24 hours. 24 hours of A Christmas Story, I think it's called. Well, I wanted to do something similar with my DVDs, the 04, 05, and 08 versions of tracking the hurricanes, and so that's what I did. Starting on December 31st, I somehow piped those through so they would show up on Ustream, somehow digitizing probably a DVD player, and out they went. There were a couple problems with them, but that's how I rang in 2011, was by streaming each of the three of the Tracking the Hurricanes documentary movies that I had up to that point. So we get into 2011, the first part of 11, and as I talked about in the last episode, there was a lot of momentum heading into that year. One of the big things that I wanted to do was, now that I had Storm Pulse with Matt Winsing as part of the offerings on our premium services site, I kind of wanted to do another rebranding. And every once in a while, it's good to do that with a company, with a brand that's part of a company, I guess. You just have to know when to do it and how to do it. And so I changed. One of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to change, because of that new partnership, kind of beefing things up, and the abilities that we had over there at Premium Services, I wanted it to be even more sort of exclusive, and I guess, I don't know, I don't remember why I decided to do a brand change, but I called it Client Services going forward. So the name was going to change from Premium Services to Client Services, that people that signed up, you'd be more like a client. Almost like a business, I guess. And so that's what I did. And so that went live, I guess you could say, just by me blogging about it. At the end of 2010, into 2011, and I did a big write-up about it at the first part of December in 2010, and that would spill over to the first part of 2011. Hurricane Track Premium Services would become client services, and I really sort of sold it as, hey, look, since 05, 6 years now, you know, as we got into 2011, we've been doing some cutting-edge, groundbreaking stuff. And I talked about who are our clients, who would these people be, current and future. What I was hoping for is to grow that future part significantly. You know, any business, you want to grow that business, right? So who are our clients? That's one of the questions that I had posed on the website. And I said many are interested in hurricanes, what their impacts are, and how they may be personally affected. Others are insurance agents, adjusters, real estate, television meteorologists, private meteorologists, emergency management officials, teachers, even stay-at-home moms, corporate executives, pilots, coastal homeowners, and students. You name it. Pretty much everybody, right? I mean, that's what it came down to. It's like, look, I want this to be more personal, like you're a client, and if you ever need anything, you have a question for me, I can focus more attention on you because you're helping to support the project, support my income, and so forth. And so I kind of build it as that, you know, really pitched it as that. And so I said, this is an interesting paragraph. So what's new for 2011 and why should you become a client? And I said, first and foremost was access. You will have access unlike any other site. From the moment you sign up, you will have access to a live chat. That's our C-Box, which is still here today, now augmented, of course, by Discord. Our chat is populated with other clients who post their thoughts, questions, links to relevant weather info, and much more. We even have an off-topic chat cafe. We don't have that anymore for talking sports, family, or whatever else is on your mind. You always have to keep it focused, believe me. I think we tried that. And politics and other topics came in, and it wrecked it. Nope, can't do it. So we got rid of the chat cafe. But that's where we were going to start 2011. Just more of everything, better of everything. And I really was hoping to add more clients, more crowdfunding folks, you know, grow the business. And then that would help to feed back on itself going forward. The more successful I was, the more we could do, that would go back into the business, more equipment, more capability, cover more weather eventually. That's what I wanted to do. That was definitely in the back of my mind, was still hurricane-centric. I really didn't have the funds or the capability to cover other weather. And an example was the Boxing Day winter storm, you know, the one there in late December of 2010. I was not able to go up to New England and cover it. I didn't have the funds to do so. I didn't have the capability. And I didn't really know if there was a market for it, etc. But that would come later. We'll get to that later. I eventually did branch out, as you know. And that's a good thing, because I am definitely a big weather geek at heart. I just happen to specialize in hurricanes, mostly because of where I lived as a child and where I lived at the time in 2011, you know, coastal North Carolina and so forth. And eventually, yes, we would be able to branch out the brand. So another thing that I was talking about in 2011 to pitch for 2011, and this is, again, is the end of December, going into 2011, what are we going to be doing? So I was trying to really sell what we were going to do on client services. You know, all the good stuff that we had, the live cams, the chat, the Storm Pulse access, the ability to have everything sort of confined to just our little club, if you will. And I really was hoping to do something truly remarkable. I've always tried to reach for stuff that's not being done, stuff that's innovative and different. And one of those things would be that in 2011, our supporters would be able to access a live video feed from our own UAV. Or unmanned aerial vehicle. 2011. How did I do that? Why would I even say that? Well, we're going to get to that. But I was pitching it as something new that we would be able to do starting in 2011. I'll give you a hint. It would happen because of my good friend, Paul Bowman, our friend from out in Pahrump, Nevada. He'll stop by in an episode or two to tell you all about that. So yeah, we were looking to go aerial in 2011, and that would lead to something truly spectacular later on. All right, we'll get to that too. So just a lot of excitement going into the new year, as there always should be. People make resolutions, I guess. I was resolving, if you will, to have a great year, have a great 2011, grow the business, do more exciting and innovative things that year. Still had the sponsorship support of All Roads Sat going into the new year. Sprint was still an equipment and technology sponsor, and I still didn't have a phone bill from them. That was great. The phones, the air cards, the new technology getting into 4G now, more, you know, available. That was a good thing, you know, moving forward. I had that still. And the support from smaller companies, Aspen Tire and Auto here in Wilmington, starting in about the mid-2000s, became a sponsor by way of saying, hey, you need tires or brakes or oil changes, anything that we can do, we got it covered. We will keep you on the road to the best of our ability. Now, they can't fix the transmission or give me a new engine or anything like that, but Aspen Tire and Auto, a couple of really small, locally owned offices down in Florida from different people. Of course, one of those was Physician Work from Jeffrey Sisk, and I still need to get in touch with him. I've talked about it last episode. I'd love to get him on, you know, to get his perspective on things from somebody from the outside, so to speak. I think that'd be neat. And then there was this other guy that had a computer repair business. His name is Lonnie, and, you know, he pitched in a couple extra $100 a year, and I'd put his ad on the homepage, you know, try to help him out too, being in South Florida, down in the Gold Coast area, just things like that. It was, you know, turning into more of a family, I guess, instead of just a business. I got to know people, and we were all kind of in this together, studying the weather, watching the weather on a general scale, and then, of course, really focusing on that word, hurricanes, that phenomenon, hurricanes. Okay, so as we got into the new year, one of the things that I was really excited about, one of several things, and by the way, we're going to have a lot going on these next few episodes, definitely. I mean, wrapping up the rest of this season, all the way through May. Jam-packed, all kinds of exciting things, new characters getting introduced, so to speak. I like the way I put that, too, characters, because some of these people are characters, okay? You'll see. Even me, right? The character of Mark Suddeth played by himself, right? Anyway, a lot of interesting and fun stuff coming up over the next several episodes. But one of the things that I was really excited about was this opportunity to educate again, more than I was doing in my blog and on social media. Those are little micro chances, if you will. I wanted to do something bigger, more involved, more detailed. I loved what I did when I worked with Lowe's, and I did some stuff with Sprint and Bank of America over the years, and Olympus Insurance was going to give me that opportunity. We had been working at since the end of December, the president of the company, Bill Lowry, and I and his marketing people and some other folks at his offices down there in the Orlando area about some ideas on what we would do. And we settled on basically creating, I don't remember exactly how many episodes, but something like 8 hurricane-related video featurettes, okay, little educational tutorials about hurricanes that they could put on their website, everything from Hurricanes 101, you know, understanding hurricanes from a very basic level, to some insurance tips, to, you know, more advanced stuff about, like, forecasting, mitigation, that very important word, mitigation, long-term strategies to lessen the effects of hurricanes over time, and involve people that were experts in those fields, not just me. In fact, I don't think I wanted to be in it at all. I wanted to produce it, edit it, shoot it, the whole bit. If there's any music, I'd write the music for it or whatever. And they would be able to send these videos. We could embed them. We could put them on YouTube. And it could reach their clients. I don't remember how many clients they had. I'm sure it numbered in the thousands. Olympus was a small independent insurance company in Florida. And I just thought this was a really unique opportunity to get back to sort of my roots of explaining hurricanes to people and getting them to understand what we're dealing with better. And from my unique way of doing things, I tried to make it easy to understand, not talking down, but not being overly scientific at the same time, try to use state-of-the-art graphics when possible, and have that interview style sort of expert sitting at a table or whatever explaining different things, you know, like hear from the sources. So that was one of the first things that I started in 2011, was building out this project. You know, how's it going to, you know, storyboarding it, outlining it, talking with Bill over the phone, some of his marketing people over the phone. I don't remember, there was a woman that handled the marketing. I don't remember her name off the top of my head, but I would work with her closely. Lots of phone calls and emails on ideas. I mean, she was head of marketing. Getting their logo right, you know, stuff like that. You know, it was very detailed. And I was really, really excited about it, very motivated. And so, you know, by the way, the business side, we had agreed on a fee for me to do this. And just in the interest of privacy, you know, I'm not going to tell you what that fee was, but it was sizable enough that I was very fortunate to have it. Believe me, it was a real shot in the arm for my business, for me personally, and it was very much commiserate with the amount of work that I was going to do. They compensated me very well. You know, I was very happy with that. And in return, I would give them, you know, some really unique content that they could put on their website and send to people that had questions about hurricanes. And that would, by default, kind of make Olympus my biggest client. You know, any intel that I got about Florida, maybe I could even put a camera or two. We only had a few back then. Near something important if Florida were to be hit. And if we were going to do this aerial vehicle thing, and I'll get to that later, being able to fly and get aerial video, you know, Olympus wanted to be first in line to maybe help some of their customers. All of these different agreements that we had, and we did. We drew up a memorandum of understanding or a contract or whatever, and they funded it, and it was great, really helping me out. A two-way street, if there ever was one. It really was. So to do this, though, I wanted, like I said, to have different experts in different areas of topics, right? And over time, I don't remember exactly how I came to know this person, but I was introduced to Greg Nordstrom. All right, this is one of the first of the characters that I was telling you about that's going to be introduced into the story now. That would happen in 2011. We interacted over Twitter, probably some on Facebook, and he was a big fan of my work through a mutual friend of his. His name is David Glenn, who went to UNC Wilmington, and you're going to hear all of this in just a little bit because, well, I sat down with Greg recently in person and recorded us interacting with each other. I don't want to call it an interview. It's a lot more informal than that. We were just kind of chatting about history. When we met in 2011, some of the things that, you know, made us sort of fast friends back then. But that would happen in 2011, and that was on towards April, so skipping ahead a little bit, the very first part of April, and it might have even been March, late March to early April, because I know that it was before something else that would happen in 2011 that was really big in the weather world, and that would be those two periods. I think it was April 16th and then the 27th. I know it was the 27th, but there were two tornado outbreaks that spanned about 11 days apart in the south and southeast, with April 27th being the most significant, including the absolutely terrifying EF5 tornado that tore through the Tuscaloosa area that's infamous now. Really, just like, you can't even make that in a movie. It was so scary. I think this was all before that, honestly, because I would not have probably been able to. In fact, I know it was before all of that, because when I drove to Starkville to finally meet Greg, I would have remembered going through Tuscaloosa to get there, and I would have seen the damage. So, yes, it was before those terrible outbreaks. So it's probably March, somewhere in March of 2011. I went to Starkville, Mississippi. That's where Mississippi State University is located. Why is that important? Well, because Greg was an instructor there in meteorology, forecasting, geography, other geosciences. Very well respected, has taught lots and lots of students, even up to that point and certainly since then. And so recently, like I said, I had a chance to sit down with Greg in person down in Gulfport, Mississippi, where he lives now. And I want to play that interaction slash interview for you. And then I'll come back and we'll kind of wrap up this episode and talk about where we go from here.
All right, let's go ahead and do this.
Come have a seat, Greg. Let's go way back to 2011.
Crazy.
So, sitting here in person with Greg Nordstrom, that's pretty cool. How you been, man?
Good. Just enjoying life down here in Gulfport. Miss Starkville, you know, right. In some ways. I miss being inside the classroom, but you know, teaching DL, I love it. I enjoy my job. I enjoy living here with my wife on the coast.
Right.
You know, you can never predict the future, but, you know, if everything goes the way we kind of plan, I can see ourselves staying here the rest of our lives.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Starkville, because that's where I met you. And that's what I want to talk about. Appreciate you joining me on Stories from the Hurricane Highway. We're up to 2011. And that's the year that I met you in person. But I want to ask you, how did you hear about me? Because you knew about me through a friend of yours, if I'm not mistaken, that lives in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, one of my good friends, he's actually at MIC in Moorhead City. His name is David Glenn. He's from Wilmington, you know, so he heard about you even before most people, because, right. You know, that's where you started.
Sure.
And he kind of told me, hey, there's this guy. He goes out on these hurricanes. He puts this equipment out. You should follow him. And, you know, this is kind of the infancy of Facebook and Twitter. So I would follow the different things you would do. And ironically, we'd end up a lot of times in the same spot.
Right.
But we
just
never
didn't know each other.
Yeah, we didn't know each other. We ran into each other or talked to each other.
We were just a mile apart during Katrina.
But I would follow you. I would follow, you know, the different things that, you know, that we would always end up pretty much. I mean, that's the thing about the chaser community, especially the hurricane chaser community. Usually you're going to end up pretty close to everyone, and you kind of mingle with each other. And, you know, look, social media is not perfect, but I will say that's how I met people like Michael Locke, or met you, or other people. So it was a good way to kind of network and meet other chasers out there.
So David Glenn sort of introduced you.
Yeah, he's from Wilmington, North Carolina. And, you know, he's a huge hurricane guy.
Huge Tar Heel fan, too.
Yeah, big North Carolina fan.
Son of a biscuit.
Well, at least he's born and raised. He's not bandwagon.
He's legitimate.
He's legit.
He's a legit Tar Heel.
He watches all the games. I mean, he's hardcore. And his wife is, too.
Right.
She gets into it just like he does. But I've known him since grad school. I've known him since about 2003. Right. And he actually went with me in Hurricane Francis. You know, so one of my early chases, he went with me and a couple of other people. And
was he there with you and Charlie?
No, he wasn't there with Charlie. And Charlie, that was my good friend Josh Johnson.
Gotcha.
He's a chief meteorologist in Montgomery.
Yeah.
And then another good friend of mine, his name is John Walker. He does a lot of stuff with drones with NASA and things like that. Yeah.
Interesting. Not Johnny Walker,
No, not the whiskey. No.
Whiskey, right. Yeah. As if I would know about that. So what brought me to meet you was this project that I was talking about earlier in the podcast with Olympus Insurance, and I wanted to put together a series of hurricane educational featurettes, little videos for this company in Florida, and I didn't really want to be in it. It wasn't going to be a Mark hosted more than it would be Mark produced, you know, that I would produce it So I needed experts in different things. And I had gotten to know you, I guess, through email or something.
I think we were talking mostly through Messenger, I would think.
Okay.
I mean, I can't remember exactly, but I know we kind of connected through David, and then
right.
I think we did talk through Messenger, I believe. Maybe some email as well. I honestly can't remember exactly.
And I knew your reputation, especially Mississippi State, of training a lot of the broadcast meteorologists that are out there. You know, and
yeah. I've taught over now 1,000 easily. Actually,
right.
I just did... I actually am at 6,348 students taught now.
Wow.
You know, so that's a lot in 16 years.
Right. And I knew your passion for hurricanes, and I thought, okay, for the Hurricanes 101 segment, so to speak, hey, Greg, would you be willing to let me come interview you and you kind of host that episode? And I thought, all right, he works at Mississippi State, it's broadcast meteorology. He's probably going to be a natural. This is going to be great. Little did I know that you didn't teach the performance side. You taught...
Well, Look, so I did get my degree in broadcast, and
right.
I had internships going all the way back to when I was 17 years old in Washington, D.C. So I've been around the broadcast side since I was a teenager. But my specialty is operational.
Right.
There was a reason why I decided... Broadcast is probably, not that I couldn't have done
right.
That wasn't what I excelled at.
Right.
I was just okay. Like, I would have done well on severe weather events, hurricane landfalls, but it's 80 and sunny outside, I'm not going to do so well
right.
on that. And I remember we went in there and it was just hot,
and
I was kind of sweaty, and it was a little uncomfortable, but we got through it and it all worked out well.
But it was neat though, let's back up. I came to Starkville. We had arranged, okay, I'm going to come out. I've got this funding from Olympus.
Yeah, we met at Ruby Tuesday.
And, yeah, we did, and which is, like, one of your favorite places or
well,
something?
That,
what's the story of Ruby's?
Nothing against Ruby Tuesday, but that's where I worked in grad school.
Gotcha.
And that one
in Starkville?
That one, that
Dang.
Exact one. And for anyone that's served or, you know, been, you know, in the service industry, it's not the easiest job.
No.
So it made me, let's put you this way. I was always a good student. I always had, you know, 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, maybe 3.8.
You didn't use ChatGPT to, never mind.
No,
that was before
that
20.
That didn't exist, yeah.
Yeah.
But, after working at Ruby Tuesday, I got a 4.0 in grad school.
Nice.
I was like, I'm going to take it to the next level.
Right. But so, we had a meal there and we learned right off the bat, I think the expression is we became fast friends. Because we had similar eating, style or pickiness?
Well,
or whatever?
We're definitely, especially when other people look at, we're definitely picky,
right?
Okay, but what's interesting is, and it's not common because, like
right.
for example, I do something that people just look at me weird. Like I'll order a burger, and I'll just take the patty out, and I was going Atkins or keto before
right.
that was even a trend. Like I don't know. I just don't eat the bun with the burger. I just
right.
eat
I don't
the
like
burger.
Anything on my burger.
Yeah, so I think we kind of had a little bit of a connection there because,
right.
as you know, holidays like Thanksgiving and
yeah.
different holidays,
awkward.
And especially in the South, you don't
yeah.
eat someone's food, they're going to get really upset
right.
at you. I think we kind of had a little bit of a bond there where
right.
it's like, oh, wait, he has kind of some weird eating habits
yes.
like I do. and you know,
God.
It was kind of... Look, when
We're
you
gonna get along famously.
Yeah, when you get teased, like... I'll put you this way. I hadn't seen my aunt in 20 years.
Right.
20 years. And the first thing she says to me is, can't believe you didn't eat this or this. And
right.
I'm like, really?
Yep.
After
20 yep.
years, that's what you're going to say? But as you know, with being a picky eater, you kind of get some crap.
Yeah.
And you get tormented by your family and stuff.
Right.
But it was nice to find someone else that had kind of a similar eating style.
Agreed. And we knew we'd get along. And I stayed at the Hilton Garden Inn there in Starkville. And we met and talked for like a couple of hours out in the lobby. And we just got along famously, like we had known each other forever.
Yeah, it really did seem like we've been
right.
friends for 10 years.
And then the next day was going to be shooting day. And I came over and I had driven the Tahoe. I remember you took a picture of it and posted it. It was on the early Twitter. And like, oh, the hurricane track vehicles in Starkville.
A lot of people were texting me like, are you in that thing?
Right,
I'm like, yep,
right.
I am.
And brought the camera up to the to your y'all have a studio.
Yeah,
right
broadcast.
There.
It's
yeah.
called the Climate Lab.
Right. And so you were talking about this earlier that I came in thinking, oh, he's just gonna be like, so Greg, tell me about the formation of a hurricane.
Yeah, so sure. A hurricane needs, and just rattle it off. But I didn't know that you were more operational. And it was like...
Well, it wasn't... It's also, too, from my perspective, I don't really know exactly what you're looking for.
True.
So it's a little tough.
And your severe weather is really... You're a severe weather guru. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean...
You're pretty... Look, I'm going to give you the props.
Yeah,
your severe weather and winter stuff... I mean, Mississippi State's won national championships
in... Yeah, I mean, look...
Forecasting.
So, for a reason. We won three. You know, when I was in it, we did. It wasn't just me, obviously. We had people like Doug Gillum and Justin Jackson and some really, really, really good people on the team. But as much as I love the tropics... I had to teach most of that to myself. So we have some tropical, and now it's even more. Now we have professors there that actually teach tropical meteorology.
Right.
When I was in school, it was mainly severe weather, and then also one of my mentors, his name is Doug Gillum, who works at the Weather Network.
Mm-hmm.
He knows lake effect snow and snow forecasts in the back of his hand. So, yes, that is, if you told me I had to forecast one thing and put my life on it, it would be severe weather.
Gotcha. And it was interesting because it was challenging to get through it. Like you said, it was hot, you didn't spend a lot of time in front of the camera.
No, at that point, I hadn't been in front of the camera in 8 years.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a long time.
But we got through it. You did a good job. I cut everything together. We made a great series that I did for Olympus. And that was the start, though. That was it. And we talked about, look, if we get... opportunities to work together, and this was in the spring of 2011, the early spring, probably in April, because I believe I missed the National Hurricane Conference, which was in Atlanta. And in fact, there was a guy there, I won't name him just out of respect, who on Twitter gave me crap, why aren't you here? I'm like, I'm in Mississippi and whatever. You should be here. This is your hurricane guy. I'm like, man, I'm working on something. You don't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
You know, it'll be okay, man. Mind your business. It was the beginnings of how social media could be used against you. Anyway.
Well, the sad thing is, look how we met. Look how, someone like myself and Michael Locke, some great friends of mine that I met through social media. And not that there wasn't still back and forth back then. But it was much more of a networking site.
Yeah.
Now it's turned into much more, how can I get in a fight with someone?
True. This guy's trying to pick a fight with me. I'm like, who made you chief of where I'm supposed to be? I'm working on something here. It's important. But yeah, we met then and we thought, hey, look, let's definitely work together. It was very exciting. And we got a chance to do so just a couple of months later when we went to Texas.
Yep.
To do something that was going to revolutionize, I thought, everything. I was always looking for that next level. We had these remote cams. Back in 2011, they were still the bigger, bulkier bullet cams and the big batteries and everything, and you still needed a laptop. But I wanted aerial video. And I had worked with Paul, we're going to have him on to talk about that. But... the advent of aerial video would happen in the spring as well, and you went with me to Texas. We met Carrie for the first time out there.
And that was the first time I've been back there since Ike.
Yeah.
And Bolver was just...
It was still wiped clean.
Just smashed. Absolutely smashed. There was only a few buildings left.
Yep. And so that was just neat. That was a good introduction to, us being able to work together. We did the trip there to Bolivar.
Went to Galveston.
Galveston, flew that plane. Paul came out. Now, was it 2011 or 2012 that we were riding along? You were driving. We were driving the Tahoe. And I was trying to get a nap. And we were on 10 out near Winnie. And I had come to from dozing off. I'm like, hey, Greg, I think that's a cow or something. Watch out for that black cow over there. You're like, what? Oh, never mind. It's tires. Sorry. You remember that?
Kind of, yeah. Also, I think it was that trip. I can't remember. But there was one point where we ran up on a construction site. And we pulled up. And the guy that was doing, you know, the digging there, he swung the car around and took the mirror off of the car. And literally another couple more feet, that might have been it.
Yeah, the adventures of Mark and Greg.
That was on the way, actually, to the coast.
Right.
So. Yep.
But anyway, it was just an introduction. That's what I wanted to do, and I'll get you in. I talk about this
was
often.
Was that also the trip where at the end of it we're going to go back? But then the one that was coming towards Jacksonville.
That was 2012. That was after the first Herbie launch.
Yeah, Barrel.
We're going to have you back to talk about that. Yeah. I won't be here in person.
That was really a cool experience. We'll I went right over Jacksonville.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we're going to have Greg back to talk. Greg's going to be back to talk about when we act, the whole Bolivar thing. Might even have him and Paul on at the same time, trying to arrange that. We won't all be in the same room, but that's what Zoom is for.
Yeah, exactly.
And then... later, let's see, we did the airplane testing, and then I guess it was in 2011, you came out to the coast for Irene.
Yep, I did.
Hurricane Irene.
Yeah, I was with one of my good friends, Michael Haynes, mm-hmm. and we came out and met up with you, and then also Michael Locke was out there, and also Tim Millar was out there. There was a whole bunch of people out
there. That could be a really crowded Zoom where we get everybody, because we flew Paul out.
Yep.
Mike Watkins came up
That's
from
right,
Florida.
That's right, Watkins was there.
Yeah.
It was a full house. We had a whole bunch of we were all just by chance in the same hotel.
Right, the Hilton Garden Inn at Kitty Hawk.
So, you know, that was the first time I went to the Outer Banks.
Right.
And we actually went out to Hatteras Island and I met that family, the fishing family. Yep. That, you know, one of them was going to, or a couple of them was going to stay in the place. Mm-hmm. And we set up some cameras there. Tim and I did that.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah, Tim and I went out there to set up some cameras.
So, yeah, there's a lot, as I told y'all, 2011, huge year, really the ramping up of more people working with the team. I would eventually meet Carrie in person. I'm going to talk about that later in this episode separately, but I wanted to introduce you all to, I mean, you've known Greg through different stuff all the way through now, but this is a retrospective. How did Mark and Greg meet? What was that all about? I know you guys have just been at the edge of your seats wondering.
Well, you
how
know
did
another
meet?
Thing, too.
But that's
that...
how we met.
Another thing that we connected on was our love for movies.
Yeah,
and like
that too.
TV shows. And,
yeah.
You know, my father worked in the movie business for a long time in advertising. So, you know, as a child, we always went to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we would talk about that a lot. That was another area we really
And see, that was important because a lot of people say, and you see this too even in your work as just generally the generalized term of storm chasing, oh, I'd love to go with you someday. Everybody says that. But until you actually work with someone, you just don't know. And Greg and I just had that, you just kind of, you know how you meet people and you know this person's going to be really annoying.
Yeah.
I hope I don't ever have to work with them.
Well,
or
sometimes
it's going to be pretty good.
Sometimes it's not that they're a quote-unquote annoying bad person. It's just
right.
Their personalities don't click.
Exactly.
And
you said it better than me.
Yeah, we meshed well in a sense that, you know, we respected each other.
Ate the same kind of food.
Yeah, we ate the same. We listened to each other's opinions,
sure.
But we would come together as a group and make the right decisions. Yeah, I mean, it's just certain people in life you meet and it feel like you've known them for a long time. And that's kind of how it felt with you.
Right.
You know, obviously we connected first on the food, but also with movies.
Food.
And we had a lot of other, you know, similar interests. I mean, we both had a passion for weather. And it was just, it was like I said, it was weird. It was like I already knew you 10 years.
Well, we can all thank David Glenn for that.
Yeah.
Over at
Newport,
Morehead City.
I got to give it to him. He's the one. You got to watch this guy. He's doing some cool stuff.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Greg, thanks for sitting down with me. I wanted to introduce everybody to that part. Like I said, it's like a book where this is where the character Greg Nordstrom comes in. You're going to love this. This is it. So thanks for being with us on
no
Stories
problem.
From the Hurricane Highway. We'll have you back when we talk about the trip to Bolivar in more detail, hopefully with Paul at the same time over Zoom.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Take care, sir. That was very nice. Nice to sit down with Greg in person, no less, in Gulfport, Mississippi. I was there recently meeting with him and some other folks working on another project, so our paths crossed, so that was awesome. Greg will definitely be back. He and I have shared many adventures since meeting back in 2011, and by the way, that meeting that we just talked about was on April the 20th. I went back and looked through Twitter in the archives there, and there was actually some severe weather near Starkville in eastern Mississippi as I was coming in,
and I was like streaming it live through Ustream, apparently, and I tweeted that. And that's how I know, oh, that's the date, because I had mentioned in that tweet that I was headed to Starkville for some hurricane season interview prep work. And so there you go. And it turns out that the 20th was between the two significant outbreaks of severe weather that really made 2011 stand out. And that would be April 16th. That was a big outbreak, but it would be outdone significantly so by the outbreak of April the 27th that gave us the infamous and ever-frightening Tuscaloosa tornado, the EF5, James Spann, and others, many others, you know, doing their incredible yeoman's jobs of covering that event there on April 27th. But the severe weather season in 2011 was very pronounced. A lot of that was because of the very warm Gulf of Mexico, warmer than average. So it was helping to seed a lot of moisture and thus energy in the deep south, the Dixie area, as these strong troughs would dig in. The dynamics were there, and we had just a phenomenal severe weather season. Lots of lives lost. Terrifying, it really was. Listen, something else happened in 2011 as I was also looking back through Twitter that stood out, because it really helped to put social media on the forefront here of how powerful it was. We really got a taste of it in 2011. And that was on March the 11th, there was the earthquake off the coast of Japan, and then the resulting, again, Hollywood-esque, frightening, nightmarish set of tsunami waves that came in. Some of that was live. We saw it live. And not as ubiquitous as we have in today's environment, where pretty much anything can be live from the remotest parts of the world. We weren't quite there yet in 2011, but it didn't take long for video and from either TV stations in Japan or elsewhere across that part of the Western Pacific, or from ordinary citizens, to hit social media, specifically Twitter, and certainly it was active on Facebook too. But that was March the 11th, and I remember seeing some of those videos coming out. And it's just one of those things that you just kind of remember. It's drilled inside your head. It really leaves an impression how violent that push of water was, just kept coming. The similarities to what it looked like during Hurricane Katrina in Gulfport, Mississippi, and elsewhere along the Mississippi coast. But, you know, this was from tsunami waves, which are energy. Well, they're all energy. One is wind energy, and the other one is from seismic, obviously. And it was just terrifying. So that was also in 2011, and really, like I said, helped to thrust social media right up to, you know, the forefront, as I mentioned, of being very important, very relevant. And I don't remember that there was a lot of misinformation back then, you know. So, one of the good old days, the golden age of social media, I guess. It was just information, raw, some of it raw, and it needed to be vetted, sure, but not a lot of conspiracy stuff or kind of the nonsense we have to deal with now. Just didn't seem like it was nearly as prevalent back then, and that makes sense. You know, it wasn't as widely available and so forth as it is now. Now everybody's got some form of social media, it does seem. But yeah, that's what was happening already in 2011. A lot going on, and I kept moving forward. You know, I did that interview with Greg, met him, spent a couple of days in Starkville. I got a tour, by the way, while I was there, of the campus. Beautiful area, Starkville. A quaint small town overall in East Central Mississippi, kind of the southern part, you know, southern third of the state, I guess you could say. Not really easy to get to, but not way off the beaten path either. So I think the University of Georgia is in Athens, just like as a side note, and that's very difficult to get to. I've been there. So anyway, Starkville, nice. I liked it. The football stadium was amazing. They're really known for their football, although their basketball team for the men's and women's are both pretty prevalent as well. But SEC football, very, very big for the Bulldogs there. Greg introduced me also to the cowbell. They ring these cowbells really loud. It's probably deafening loud at the stadium there. And it was just really, really neat. It was at CS class, introduced me to some of the classes that he taught, and people knew who I was. You know, the Tahoe was there. People were taking pictures of the Tahoe, posting that on social media. It was cool. It really was. And it was nice to be able to involve him in this project, and had my work cut out for me. I had to interview several more people. I needed to go to, I was going to travel a lot in the springtime in May 2011 there. And this is very important. A big reason that I could travel and fund a lot of the things that I wanted to do was because of this big project with Olympus Insurance. And that and the continued sponsorship and support from All Roads Sat and some other smaller opportunities that had come my way really helped out. And I was doing a couple of other jobs, videography, that kind of thing, some dance competitions that I would film from time to time as my daughters continued to do dance, and I would get introduced to a competition here or there. That made a little extra income as well. So from an income perspective, things were definitely looking up. I was able to travel more and accomplish all of these goals. So what I want to do, kind of rounding out this episode, is plant the seed for the next episode. Now, one of the other things that I was going to be doing in 2011 would be to work with a company called Kitty Code that had this app called Hurricane for iOS. It was not for Android. It was iPhone. I don't know if it was on iPad yet in 2011. Pretty popular app there. A hurricane tracking and information app. And one of the founders of the company, Kitty Code, and one of the co-developers of the app, the way I understand it, Eileen Jones, had gotten in touch with me over social media. Of course, social media was starting to become a true gateway to meet people and very positive networking tool. And we had interactions probably starting in 2010. And by 2011, she said, you know, look, I got some ideas that I'd like to talk to you about. Next time you're down in Florida, maybe we can meet up and I can pitch those to you. I'm thinking about working together with you at Hurricane Track if you're interested. And I was. And so the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway, my guest will be Eileen Jones of Kitty Code. And we're going to talk about the development of Hurricane, the app development process as a whole, kind of deep dive into the weeds a little bit, as they say, about that whole process, how she came to know me and my work, and eventually what became a collaboration and a job opportunity, you know, that to kind of jump ahead, she would pay me to produce content for the Hurricane app. And that was also really cool, innovative and different. Had to figure out some technical things to make it work or whatever, but we'll talk about all of that in the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. And then coming up soon as well, we're going to have Paul Bowman and hopefully Greg on at the same time through Zoom, of course, and talk about what we were going to do in May of 2011, this whole idea of developing aerial video capability, you know, using an unmanned aerial vehicle, a UAV. This is before drones, you know, at least commercially available drones or prosumer drones or whatever, consumer to prosumer. No, those didn't exist yet. And we were ahead of that. So we'll talk about that and all these other adventures that are coming up in the next several episodes here of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, I appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate your feedback. And these next few episodes are just going to be fantastic. I wish I could just do them all at once, but I have to pace myself. Once per week or so, we'll crank these out and we'll keep moving forward down that hurricane highway as we get closer and closer to the present time, which, by the way, eventually, that's the goal here, is we're going to get to where we're close to the present, and then this podcast will become a companion to each year that we are currently involved in, if that makes any sense at all. So that's why I'm doing these in several years per season. We will end this season with 2012, the end of 2012, and then the next season will be 13, probably 14, and 15. And so it might take a few more years, but eventually we're going to get caught up, and this will truly be a companion to current time. All right, anyway, so it's nice to be just sort of doing this retrospective while we get there, and you can kind of understand how things happened along the way. All right, as always, again, like I said, thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it. I am Mark Suddeth for Hurricane Track. That is us. That is you. I'm so glad you are involved. I will be back with another episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway for you next week.